are listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys watch their way through Sex and the City for the first time ever. Mostly, I'm Corey Cavan.
I'm Kevin James Doyle.
My name is John Sieber, and I'm feeling great. I'm feeling great tonight.
You know, I had to shift my mindset because obviously I love doing this, but I had a really long work day and I shifted my mindset to be like, no, I'm not. I don't. My day is done and now I get to hang out with my friends.
I love that.
I'm not doing work.
Yeah.
I'm not, I don't have another thing. Now I just get to hang.
Yeah.
Hang with the boys.
This is just hanging. This
is just hanging. I had to shift mine too because I was really tired and I took a nap like an hour and a half ago. And you know, when you take like a solid, like 20 to 25 minute nap and you don't want to go over the nap bubble, but then you come out of that and you have to like wait a little bit to get refreshed. I feel like I timed it just right to where I'm in the refresh zone right now.
See,
so I'm ready to go.
Refreshed. I've never experienced that. When I take naps, I'm always just like, it puts me in a bad spot always.
Well, how long do you nap for?
I don't nap because I know that about. So maybe I'll try it again. Maybe I'll try napping this summer.
Here's two nap strategies that are sure to put the listeners to sleep.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where we talk nap strats. Let's go.
I wonder if there's ever been any nap scenes in Sex and the City. If there's like one of them, just like I can imagine a slow dolly shot across Carrie's apartment and her like lying there, like napping, where it's like Carrie was like, well, she would say herself. She's like, I was so tired from me and Big's conversation.
Who do you think out of the four main women, who do you think naps the most? Like, is there a power napper? And is it not Samantha? That's my question.
I feel like it's got to be Miranda.
Ooh.
Miranda seems like she's one. No, yeah. Listen, she is a mother of a young child, so she's tired all the time. I feel like Miranda's naps are her working on the couch on a Saturday, and then she falls asleep, and then ends up turning over and sleeping for an extra 30. That would be my thought.
Also, you know how there's the, it's like Ben Franklin or something. Like he would sleep like an hour and I don't know. He had some weird sleeping schedule and then he ended up getting all this stuff done. And I feel like Miranda probably has something like that. She's like, I sleep 4 hours a day and then I take 2 20-minute naps in the day.
That's like the ultra man. There's like a whole Tim Ferriss thing of like how you can hack your sleep schedule. And one is the ultra man where it's like you're on like a razor's edge, but you only sleep like max, like 45 minutes.
You like dump ice buckets of water on yourself and hyperventilate yourself every morning too.
Something. Yeah.
I definitely could see Miranda doing that. Like just cold showers, cold baths. Yeah.
But you sleep like, it's like you, if you add it up, it ends up being like 6.5 hours a day, but you do it in certain increments. And like, once you get it right, your body's like optimal, but you have to, but if you break it, you're screwed. I could see Miranda.
Yeah.
I couldn't necessarily see her trying to, that's not her vibe.
I don't think Miranda hacks. Like she
doesn't hack.
She's ordering Chinese food, like delivery. She's watching
eating cake out of the trash.
She's watching her British rom-coms. Like she's not interested in life hacking.
What was that show called again?
I have no idea.
It was like
Chauncey's Pleasure.
Rory and Bob.
It was like two people's names. Yeah. Here's Miranda's life hack: how to make your garbage edible. Eat cake out of the trash.
Yeah.
Let me just say, and this is not just us being like, oh, go review us. But I don't know.
But it is.
But if you haven't, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh my
God.
No.
Someone just said it was Daisy Do. She said hilarious commentary and fresh perspective on the series. And I feel like she wants to go back and be like, Also, they're doing some deep nap commentary, which is as fresh a commentary as you can get, because no one has ever dipped into
Sex and the City nap behavior. But Corey, I would like to hear a brief summary of your two nap strats.
Yep. The briefest I can give on the two nap strats. Nap strat one, because they say, they being the, you know, whenever you say they say, it's like the
nap
experts,
lobby.
The nap lobby. 20 minutes is your best nap time that you're not super groggy afterwards. So I set an alarm for about 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then, because that gives you a couple minutes to get into it.
Okay.
So that's
strategy
one. Let me
be honest with you,
one.
Dude. Putting it at 24, you're playing with
you
fire.
Are just playing.
Hey. You know
you're
what?
Dancing
I'll say,
with the
I'll
devil
say
right there.
Two things. Live dangerously, nap dangerously. Okay?
I've known Corey for a long time, and he is not scared to nap for 24 minutes.
Not dog. And then the next one is the disco nap. You know what a disco nap is, right?
Nah.
Disco nap is you drink like a shot of espresso or a cup of coffee. You go down for that 20-minute nap. And then you wake up.
Ooh.
And then it's all kicked in by then. And then that makes the recovery time a little better. And you're ready to go.
That's great.
Disco nap's great.
My issue is I have narcolepsy. So like napping, like that whole idea of sleep for me is very stressful. Just all of it is too stressful to think about.
Yeah.
I wish I could not sleep.
Can I ask a question that has to do with that, which is, it seems like the coffee culture in the Sex and the City world was very much like pre Starbucks world takeover.
It's pre, yeah.
And
happening
pre.
So yeah. Was everyone just rocking like shitty bodega coffee then?
Well, what was that your question, Kevin?
Yeah, it was just what was the coffee culture? Because now, like,
you guys want to get deep into coffee culture?
And we're big, just so everyone knows, like, we big coffee boys.
We fit the Brooklyn bro coffee stereotype across the board.
Listen, I'll just say this to our listeners. We're the worst.
If someone saw where we live, they're like, oh, three dudes that live in Brooklyn. And you were like, oh, they probably do pour over. We would be like, what type of pour over? Because I have a Chemex and I also have.
It would be like, yeah, please define yourself, because I also have a V60 and a Kalita Wave. So yeah. I do pour over, but that's like saying, you know, that's like, oh, you know, he plays water sports. Well, which kind?
Here's how pathetic we are. I am vacationing with Katie's parents and my parents. I brought my burr grinder on vacation.
Dude, the big one?
Yeah.
I am leaving tomorrow. I'm leaving the city tomorrow. And I have been, this is the people that are listening to the pre-episode chat on this are really getting some gems today. I have been in a thing where I'm like, should I bring my burr grinder?
Yes.
But I might fly. I don't know if I'm going to fly or rent a car.
Dude, if you
like,
fly
I don't,
with it, you bring that as a carry-on all day.
Because I also was just going to buy a hand burr grinder. That's
oh,
like
that's,
40
that's
bucks.
That's an option too.
And then I would be like, oh, I have one for traveling, for camping, which I never do. So
all
there
right.
you go.
Well, this is,
you know what?
This would be my,
sorry, go ahead. What's your question?
But this would be my question, which is like, I definitely feel like coffee cart, Miranda's coffee cart. She just
she's
goes up to
cart.
A cart, $1. It's burnt.
She's got,
it doesn't
she's
matter.
Got, she has baby shit smeared on her face. She's just been through the ringer of life
and
she's
gets just
that
like
dark coffee.
And if she did go to a place, she would get a red eye. Cause that's like an extra shot in a cup of coffee.
Sure.
She just needs that extra juice. I know it was some Instagram post from someone, but they had, I think it was the guys's coffee.
Yes, it was.
What would the,
I think that
what
was
would
every
the
outfit.
Other girls' coffee drinks. What would they be?
I feel like Carrie's got to be some sort of Starbucks, like
mocha sugary.
That's
macchiato.
Also iced, like an iced ice sugary macchiato.
Yeah.
Something like that. She's just like walking around the streets of Manhattan with somebody holding one of those big cups.
Samantha is like a double espresso. Just like quick, dirty, get it done, get out, efficient.
Yeah, I don't have time.
Hot and fast, honey.
Yeah.
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 And then what's Charlotte?
Charlotte's French press.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Charlotte's definitely French press. That's a good call.
And so then what's Miranda?
Miranda's cart
Miranda's
coffee.
Miranda's shitty bodega coffee.
She's bodega cart coffee. New York City cart coffee.
We're going to do a little segment here where I'm going to read facts about something. And I want you two to try to guess what this something is.
Welcome to Facts About Something.
Facts About Something. This item first hit stores in 1980. That's the first clue. This was created in 1968 by accident. The original color of this item was also by accident. And canary yellow remains the most popular color of this item. What is this item?
KitchenAid mixer.
Nope.
I was going to say a Volkswagen Bug.
Nope. I'm talking 3M, Minnesota Mining Manufacturing, Spencer Silver trying to develop a strong adhesive, accidentally develops weak adhesive, puts it on the back of some canary yellow scrap paper. Ladies and gentlemen, you have 1980s smash hit, the Post-it note.
Wow. That's how it came about.
Whoa. And you know what? I learned that in my business marketing class in Minnesota. And this Post-it note always sticks two times.
Yeah, what do we think that's going
to
be?
How many people are just like, what's this little fact game? Get to the point. You're safe in our hands.
The Post-it note was created by accident. That's a great fact.
Do you realize the trap we just set for everyone where we start off talking about naps, then we get into third wave coffee culture, and then we bring it back to Sex and the City, and people are like, I'm into this. It's entertaining, but they need to kind of get on with it. And all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, we're talking about the Post-it.
Yeah. Is this a great top of the episode or the greatest top of the episode? That's what you have to ask yourselves.
Yeah.
Let's quick do a versus for a tournament. Most iconic use of the Post-it, would it be Sex in the City?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion, the fact that they invented the Post-its? Ooh. That's a plot point in Romeo and Michelle's
high school. And this thing that I have, it says, number one fact, these were created in 1960 by accident. And then in parentheses, it says, nope, Romeo and Michelle didn't invent them.
Wow.
I've never seen Romeo and Michelle's wedding or whatever.
I haven't either. Oh,
it's great.
So I feel like a lot of people probably just flipped out.
As of right now, this is the most significant Post-it note in media history for me.
Yeah, I would say me too. I'm looking.
What an iconic. I wonder if they knew the iconic nature of it being a Post-it. You know what I mean? Like. Yeah. I wonder if that's part of the writer's room. I know we're going to have to, we'll get to the episode and we can talk about it after, but it's like, but it wasn't a note. Mm. It wasn't a letter. It was like, there is something about it being iconic because of the color, because it's a Post-it, because it's a thing that maybe she has her writing. It's like this like invasion.
And it's
into
on her computer. It wasn't like those, you remember those little poems that you could write on your refrigerator? You know, with those different words.
Magnetic poetry?
It wasn't magnetic poetry that said, sorry, I can't, on a refrigerator. It was a Post-it note.
I wish
her,
it was. Dude, what if, like, what if he would have...
The most charming bitch move of all time. Be like, oh, that was sweet, but wait, that's horrible.
Depending on, like, which guy Carrie dates, like, what if she ends up dating... like some downtown graffiti artist and he just spray paints that like all across her wall. Just like Banksy style. Sorry. I can't. Don't hate me. And then there's like a little rat doing a shruggy with wearing a cop's hat. And it's like a super iconic Banksy thing.
And that becomes like the artist's entire name. Be like, do you follow? I'm sorry. I can't. Don't hate me. Oh man. He's such a, his work is honestly has elevated street art. To
I'm
just
a fan
art.
Of his entire catalog.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Every woman he's broken up with, he's done it in a different way on their wall.
Well, let's hop in. For those of you found along at home, Berger has just left Carrie the famous Post-it note. Sorry, I can't. Don't hate me. And we're going to hop into season 6, episode 7, the Post-it note or the Post-it always sticks twice.
Post-it always sticks twice.
I just want to make a prediction. The first scene is going to have to be there's either a tiny little scene and then a chat and chew, or it opens on a chat and chew with Carrie. Just with Carrie has the first line and it's like, what the fuck? And they're at a chat and chew. It's some sort of what the fuck Carrie saying at a chat and chew is the opening line to this episode.
My prediction is she's going to take the rest of her post-it notes and make a stick figure of Burger falling down the stairs. Like a stick, a flip book of Burger falling down the stairs.
I love fuck, that.
John, you won.
I think you all won. Right. I don't have another one. I was going to say my prediction is it opens up on the scene from Romy and Michelle's. Then it zooms out and then they're watching it. And then Samantha's like, did they really invent that? And then they go into it. That was mine. It was very meta.
All right. All
right.
Let's get into this shit.
Go all grab right, a let's coffee. Let's watch it.
Grab a coffee. Take Bye. A disco nap.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Episode 81. A post-it always sticks twice. Burger returns, but then breaks up with Carrie with a post-it note. Miranda finally loses all of her baby weight and rediscovers her skinny jeans. Charlotte decides she wants a small wedding. Samantha is reluctant to be labeled as Smith's girlfriend. And now, back to the boys.
The post-it doesn't stick once. You know it always sticks twice.
All right, $1. I'll Venmo whoever $1 if they can tell me who directed the movie that they named this this title after.
The Postman Always Rings Twice?
Yes.
It was...
I'm going to go Spielberg.
I'm going to go...
All right.
I can't think of the guy.
Right. We have so much to cover. Who was it?
Yeah, we got so much to cover.
I thought it was Alfred Hitchcock. It wasn't. So no one gets anybody. I have to.
You have to Venmo all our listeners $1.
It's open for whoever, the first person that responds, you need to Venmo $1 too.
Yes, the first person that responds.
Okay. So Carrie posed the question. She talked about getting, like, women's choice is only to get married or learn something. Why aren't we such a rush from confused to Confucius? And she asked the through line, do we search for lessons just to lessen the pain?
Mm.
Samantha was labeled Smith's girlfriend. She told him to not say that in a TRL interview. And then when she finally said it, she was a little bit upset that she was labeled kind of a nobody. Charlotte, waffled kind of between this being her second wedding and the joy of having a ring, but the frustration of it being her second wedding and not wanting a big wedding party. Miranda found her skinny jeans and her confidence. And Carrie kind of runs into Burger's friends and deals with the label of like an angry woman. And it's just kind of like, I guess the entire episode is more the four of them living in Carrie's nightmare scenario of the day that she got dumped with a post-it note. And it's kind of just their adventures bouncing around in that single day. So
wait, did you say, sorry, were you done with the wrap up?
No, yeah, I was, but what were you going to add?
Did you mention the things that happened after? Sorry. Did you mention the things that happened about them going to the bar and the arrest and stuff? You did, right?
No, Carrie. Then they smoke a joint. They go to a dive bar. Carrie smokes a joint and she gets arrested for smoking a doobie. Not arrested, detained, temporarily detained.
Am I being detained?
But yeah, we need to talk about a lot of things. I think the first thing is that opening scene. The engaged versus enraged, which like how, and I know Corey, we've talked about this joke and you've done several great jokes about the reality of New York, about how it's like a brutal girl that throws you in the back of a car and beats you up. But New York can go back and forth from the most magical place in the world, if you're in the right frame of mind, to just the seventh layer of hell in a blink of an eye. And I love that they kind of showed Carrie and Charlotte's experience with the two different versions of New York.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true. That's totally true. And it can like turn on a dime. It like from one day to the next, even like within a couple hours, it can turn on a dime.
I heard about this thing that's true. That's like, there's a psychology to like, if you miss, it's like a bus stop thing, but whatever, like you get endorphins when you make the bus. And so you remember it more. But you forget it. But when you miss the bus, somehow if you like looked at when you missed the train, it feels like it happens more to you than it actually does. But really for everybody, if you kept track of it over the long haul, you'd realize like, oh yeah, both have happened a whole bunch. And I feel like that was like a great example of, she wasn't waiting for the train, but that's like one of the biggest things. Like it could be the worst day that you have, and that's going to be the day that the doors just close on you at the last minute. And then there are other days that like you're having a good day, and then it feels like the train just like was like 1 minute away, and then you walk on and you're like, I'm on time. I found money on the ground. Like, it's great. So,
or even if you miss it, you're like, I missed the train. It's not a big deal. And then I like ran into my old coworker. This is the best. You're like, you're more, you can like paint it in a better way.
Imagine that happens everywhere in the world. You know, like I'm sure there's some days where you're like driving to work and you're catching all green lights and there's no ads on the radio and you're just like, this is the greatest. But I think New York can exasperate that a lot because you're just surrounded by people. You're getting bumped. If you're slightly agitated, then New York will shake you to the point of erupting and you're just like, get away from me.
Like a monster. And you don't even, you're from Ohio or Illinois or North Carolina. And still you're just like, I'm walking here. Where'd that accent come from?
it's cause I'm living in New York. That's where my accent came from.
Totally. They're having a great time. Cause it's what I really like about this episode so far is that, I was kind of right. It's like a little intro and then right into
I thought about that,
which you could just you could feel that was pretty obvious, but it was, I really liked that there was such a clear sense of time in the last two episodes. Like they're almost part one and part two. And a lot of times you don't know if it's weeks or whatever go by, that's not really important to the show. And with this, it was like, oh man, like, she literally woke up like the last episode when she woke up and this is her going to talk. And so there was just like, everything was so compressed, which was cool.
Yeah. So I guess what I would love, I think we can talk about like the overarching philosophy that they talked about is, does everything happen for a reason? You know, Charlotte thinks everything happens for a reason. She plays the game like, if I hadn't met Trey and gotten married, then I never would have gotten divorced. And if I didn't get divorced, I wouldn't have met Harry. Therefore, like everything happens for a reason. And in the beginning, at least, everyone is kind of exhausted with that philosophy, particularly Miranda, who's exhausted from having Brady and Carrie. I love when she puts the paper over Charlotte's rock and is like, you know, paper covers rock, like shut up with this talk. But then eventually they all kind of come around to it. And, you know, Miranda's like, if I didn't met Steve and have this baby, I never would have stopped eating. If I didn't stop eating, I wouldn't have been able to fit in these skinny jeans. If I didn't fit in the skinny jeans, I never would have discovered how many attractive men there are in this city. So I thought that was an interesting question.
I feel like everything happens for a reason is, I think we are forced to reckon with the fact that it's true, or else you might just get depressed. And so it's it's really easy to think that when you're in a good mood, and then when you're not, it's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Cause if you, you have to do that in order to tell yourself life makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because if things don't happen for a reason, then you're just like, everything's random and I can't explain or take away any learning from this terrible thing that happened. Mm-hmm. So then life just sucks. And like, mm-hmm. I feel like that is, there is like truth to that sometimes, but I do think that like people always want to take meaning from something that happened, you know? So you have to be like, and I think it's true too. Like, I think that you can look at things and find meaning and purpose and things to like take you to the next thing. But I think if you don't take it from that, it's like you're saying, like you're forced to reckon with it, because otherwise you're like, yeah, I just wasted 6 weeks of my life dating this guy, like when she's talking about Burger, and it meant nothing. And so then if it's like, okay, well then you're just forced to grapple with loss that's irredeemable. And that's like very hard to deal with.
Isn't it that also post breakup is the time when all of a sudden, like literally nothing is different in the world, but then all of a sudden in your life, all the questions are being asked, that it's like, why me? Why didn't it work? What am I going to do with my life? Will I ever find, like, I feel like breakups have even more so than death. And I think we've talked about this before, like, a really difficult breakup, which this one's not the worst one. Because it's not like they were super close, but still, a hurtful breakup can be even more traumatizing than death, because with death, you have to reckon with the end of something. But when someone's still out there, there's like this reminder that, and there's never any real closure. No matter how much closure there's to breakup, there's never actual closure.
Mm-hmm. There's a very good podcast that someone recommended to me. It's this podcast called On Being with Krista Tippett. And they talk a lot about all this like different, it's just like life stuff. And like, but there's a specific episode called The Myth of Closure. And the lady talks about death and divorce, but she also talks about breakups. And she's like, everyone says that there's a time you need to get over things. And there's also, there will be an end to it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, that is not true. It will incrementally continue for the rest of your life. And people a lot of times are telling you to do that for them, because they need you to feel better for them. And they can't handle the fact that you are still grieving with it. Okay to grieve something for the rest of your life. What'd you say?
I said fun podcast.
No, yeah. I think the big takeaway for me is when Carrie asks, like, let me find her exact quote. She says, do we search for lessons to lessen the pain? And you guys know me. 100%. I'm a big unexamined life is a life not worth living. Shout out to my boy Socrates. Like, I think if you're constantly not examining the decisions you made, where you are in life, what you're doing, why you're living, and how you're perceiving life the way you are, that ain't a life worth living. You know, gotta be examining that.
And we've talked about our breakups and certain things on here before and different. But I thought it was so devastating when I got engaged, broke it off, and it took probably 2 to 2.5 years before that. Like, I totally could relate to Kristen Davis in this, Charlotte in this episode, because it really bothered me. I was like, oh, I used all my engagement tricks already. Mm. I like plan to place to like next time I do it, even if it's going to mean more because it's going to be a person that I know I want to be with, but there will be a thing that's like, I've already bought a ring. I've already given a girl a ring. I've already gone to the right place with the right like engagement party thing. And I felt like it was a younger, like I had to go through that to then realize maybe there was some part of you that was putting meaning on those things rather than the relationship.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, I definitely would be a huge like Charlotte in the situation of like, yeah, like everything has meaning and like that was just as important to get you to the next thing. Of course, then Charlotte has to look, go ahead.
No, I was, go ahead.
Then she learns her own lesson that it's like, at first she says that and then she's challenged by it to be like, oh no.
Yeah.
What is it? So.
Yeah.
Let's talk about bed. So they go to the opening of a new club called Bed.
Do you guys remember Bed? So Bed might have been closed by the time I moved here, but there was another club called Duvet.
No.
That was on.
Shut up.
Look it up. There's club called Duvet.
So dumb.
I think Duvet actually had some like shady stuff go down there. But
wait,
like,
was Bed a real place?
Yes, Bed and Duvet. There was a whole thing of bed themed nightclubs in New York. There's an article on, I think it's called The Punch, which is like a drinks blog.
So
there's a whole article about the rise and fall of bed themed clubs in New York. But Duvet was one that was open, I believe, when all three of us lived here. I know it was open when I moved here. I think it closed in like 2010.
That's like, I am admittedly OCD. Like I do not like, if my butt sits on the subway, it's not touching my bed.
You would have hated the club called Butt then.
Like it's just New York is just such a disgusting place, and my bed is such a clean, soft, safe place. And those two have no business interacting with each other at all. I cannot think of a worse club than Bed. Plus, every time I sit in a theater seat, I'm like, I'm for sure getting bed bugs right now. I'm like, that just
wrote. You're telling me that you couldn't think of a worse club than Bed.
No.
But we have talked about another club on here that did a thing called Stink Daddy Underwear Night.
Dude, I would Stink Daddy Underwear Night 100 times over than laying on a bed in a nightclub that like it was infested with bed bugs and disgusting.
I agree.
Thank you. I just needed someone to speak the truth. Thank you.
Give me the Stink Daddies, dude.
I 100% agree. I'm in on the Stink Daddy Club way more.
It's just like, man. That is already echoing through my mind whenever I'm like sitting or in a place on a couch in public. I'm just like, this is so disgusting. This is so disgusting. So to have beds littered around a bar with spilled drinks and people sweat and bed bugs, like, no.
Also, I'm a huge fan of separating
church and state, but we'll get in that later.
And that's, listen, I don't want to go on a rant, but like obviously it can put you in a flirtatious zone maybe to be like, then you can like make these like flirty bed jokes, but it's like, I don't want to be at a club called Bed sitting on a bed talking to a girl. I want to talk to a girl and then be in my bed with us naked. Like I don't need to mix the two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
was that the letter that you wrote to the club called Bed when you were like, I'm canceling my Prime membership to Bed?
It was like, here's why.
It was a post-it note.
Let me get some things clear right about now.
Here's how my equation goes.
Also, I don't want to leave us on it too long, but it's not comfortable to sit on a bed. Like you have to lean back on one arm.
I know.
And then you'd
they
have to
were
be holding
all sitting
like a
so
martini glass. Like you would have to sit up by the headboard. Like whenever I've talked to anyone on a bed, it's not comfortable unless you're like lying down.
Yeah, beds. And
but it's not like, and you're just like, talking while you're about to sleep. But like, you're not. Yeah, it's not a comfortable thing to chill on. That's why they have seats and chairs.
It's
at bars.
Just like insane. But so luckily, they got out of bed with one of the most. Carrie had that awkward conversation with Berger's friends.
Yeah, which who was that friend?
I don't know.
Freaking
that's Michael
Showalter, director of The Big Sick and member of the sketch comedy group, group The State.
Oh.
He's been in a ton of stuff, but he directed The Big Sick, the movie with Kumail Nanjiani.
I mean, he's like comedy legend.
He's like
and
huge comedy
fellow
legend. And what's crazy is, and what's crazy is he was probably like, that's probably like 10 years after The State, which was a show on MTV. So he was in his like acting. Like that was probably a huge thing that it was like, oh, Showalter like got this big part on Sex and the City.
Yeah.
So he had a really big part.
Big shout out to Stella too. One of the best sketch
Stella.
Shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, he did great, but that scene was very uncomfortable for me. Did anyone really else think like
she
it
did
felt out of place from Sex and the City?
Well, she met, well,
there's a lot of, yeah,
I don't know about, I didn't feel that. I felt that she made the right decision and then she went and did the wrong thing. And then everyone's like,
yeah.
And I don't necessarily think it was ironic. I think they actually think she did the right thing at the end, but she didn't.
Yeah. Also, I need to rant about this. Like this, when people go out and they're just like, you have to come. And Miranda's like, I don't want to. And Carrie's like, you have to come to make me have to. I'll use PostNote. And then they get there and they see each other for 30 seconds. And then Miranda just like goes and sits with the guys. And that's just like, apparently fun for Carrie. Like, why? I thought there she was like going there to be there with her friends, and but that yet Carrie's so okay with it if she just meets Peter and chills in a bed.
Because she then wants her to get out. She's sad about Steve. She wants her to get out and
put on them skinny jeans.
Put on them skinny jeans.
Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way.
But then Carrie, in a classic Carrie way, blows up the whole night and makes everyone leave and kills the entire reason she got Miranda to come out.
Yeah, it's just like if I was depressed and I was like, you guys are coming out, and you're like, no, I don't want to. And I'm like, I'm bogarting you right now. You're coming out and making me feel better. I would be super pissed then if Kevin was just like sitting on a bed with some like Mac, and I'd be like, I commandeered you to make you come out and make me fun. Your job is to get drunk with me and have as much fun as possible with me. It's not a time for flirting right now.
I will say this. Yeah. I will say this. We were talking about this the other day. Off mic in private, but our friend group is not big into even all the single guys and single girls. We're big into going in groups of people and hanging out together. We're not really into like going out and finding a babe or like finding a dude.
That's good. That's also because we're like in our late 30s.
Yeah, that's true. No one's young.
That's true. That's true. But it's like even on nights like that, like that's not really our thing. I think we all like hanging out together, and there's usually not like a random flirt energy. Like there's still people that's literally what they're doing in this show. They're the same age as us now.
Yeah.
And whatever.
Let's go, dude. Let's do it in the fall when we're back together. Let's go out and paint the town red and
let's go paint the town bed.
Let's go paint the town bed. Let's go to that second bar that they went to. What was it called? Drown the Hound. That
very
is a bar that we would hang out in. We have an affinity for dive bars.
Oh,
my
gosh.
So here's the deal. We can get into the Drown the Hound thing, but we are in a classic Sex and the City voice dub Leonardo DiCaprio ex machina situation here, if you know what I'm saying. So this is a whole other thing. I feel like I don't want to commandeer. We'll talk about it real quick now and we can get over it so we don't get all out of sorts. But Drown the Hound is actually the bar Down the Hatch, which is in Greenwich Village, which is one of those like crappy college dive bars, like, you know, like all those ones that are on McDougal Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those, like it's Down the Hatch.
The worst.
And so, yeah, it's terrible. It's like Penny Pitcher Night. There's another one called Off the Wagon. It's like those bars. So I read an article while we were watching the episode because I know how to multitask. Kevin,
got to get my sushi.
I was going to say, is someone getting takeout? All right, I'll keep going with this. So basically, Down the Hatch threatened to sue HBO.
What?
Because when that episode came out, they were like, you're portraying our bar as a place where you could pay off our bartenders and they give you drugs. They give you a joint.
Yeah, that's exactly what this place is.
Exactly. That's 100% what it is. Also, weed culture in New York was very different at that time.
Yeah.
I'm guessing because it's everywhere now. But Down the Hatch was like, we're going to sue HBO and you need to not air the episode.
What?
Like before it came out, Down the Hatch was like, you can't air this episode. It makes this establishment look like a place where you can go get drugs from bartenders. And so my guess is if you know the true story of this, tell us. But my guess is they aired it, and then for the DVDs and stuff, they overdubbed it to say "Drown the Hound" instead of
"Drown the Hound."
Drown Brown, which I gotta say, like, creative use of bar name. But yeah, it was like a whole, it was a whole deal where they were threatening a lawsuit against them.
That's crazy.
I was like, where is that supposed to be? But yeah, it's supposed to be down the hatch on McDougal.
That is what is so great about New York City dive bars is, like, you go to New York, there's a restaurant where, like, ninjas lower from the ceiling to bring you your food.
Are you talking about Ninja, like, New York? Ninja New York, where I have my 29th birthday? I'm just talking about,
like the amount of experiences you can have in New York restaurants makes the Rainforest Cafe look like a playtime. Like, you can do so many different things and eat so many different types of foods that you can get overwhelmed. And sometimes you just need a home base that is a absolute smelly, disgusting bar that exists in every small town in America.
Ours closed. Our bar like that closed.
It did. And it's, yeah, but like those bars serve like such a good purpose for like recentering yourself. And
John,
so, like,
do you remember
that place,
before you got engaged, it was like a few weeks before you got engaged, we went out in the East Village to Whiskey Town and
I've never been there.
You, John, I think me and Corey probably drink a little more than John, but when John flips the switch, he'll say, like, early on, he'll be like, tonight I'm going to get hammered. And like, I'm sure I get hammered way more than John does.
It's happening.
But when John is just like, it is a fucking decision. And when you do, it is like, it's going to be a good night.
I remember one of those nights. We can't go down this rabbit hole because we don't have a ton of time, but I remember one of the nights that both of you on a flip the switch night where you were like, it's happening. Something happened at this one bar in Brooklyn where Kevin and I have done comedy shows at, where you guys were there doing like karaoke till 4:30 or 5 in the morning or something like that. And I remember hearing about it the next day.
And
I
ended up making out with like some new person that just like came into our friend group and made out with her. Dude. And then she became like close friends with everyone. And I was like, oh, that was like,
That's the night where everyone was doing stand-up comedy, like improvised stand-up comedy. We were all wasted at like 4 a.m. And I got up on the mic and I was like, everyone take out your phones. Find 3 people you haven't talked to in 1 year and send 5 encouraging text messages. And this one guy was like, loser. And I was like, take out your phone or come outside.
Oh my gosh.
I love you. I was like, threatened to fight someone for a bit.
I was like, you encourage people right now.
There is something very truthful, no matter where it is. I'm sure everyone listening, we would love to hear your rager stories, but there is something so good with a friend group unless you are sober or don't drink or have a problem. But even then, you gotta rage sometimes in other ways.
You gotta rage sometimes.
But it's like that when you just decide, it's just like, get the gang together. It's going down.
There's nothing better. That's what makes life worth living. I feel like that's what this episode was about. She was just like, I got a bad post-it note. Tonight, we're doing it all. We're going to go ham. And I loved it.
And yeah, for that, I think it's admirable. Like Carrie's thing, it's like, we're doing it, y'all. Yeah. We're doing it.
All right. Well,
and like, I think some of the other episodes, like some of the other storylines suffered a little bit. Like, I wasn't super invested in like Miranda's or even Charlotte's. Like Smith and Samantha were pretty interesting, especially because it ended with her getting chased out by New Jersey, like the bridge and tunnel crew chasing after her. Mm-hmm. But just the idea of gathering, like putting up the bat signal, gathering the crew and going out to a wild night is something that like everyone needs that. Everyone needs that in their life.
Really? What is the point? I guess they did shots in the Old West being like, I have a whiskey and then you do a shot, but it's like just the proliferation of shots and doing shots. When you really step back and think about it, you're like, be emotionally and honest with your brain. You're like, it's so funny. You're just like, let's get to a different level than reality. Cause reality sucks right now. I need to be intoxicated. It's like, but it seems like such a joyful thing to do. That's like shots. And really it's not even enjoying like some wine or having a beer. It's just like, I'm going to taste this disgusting thing in order to not be in reality.
It's like the other thing unrealistic about that episode is that I think they were at the ice cream parlor at midnight. Like if they were going out on a wild night like that, you're going to be at a diner at like four in the morning, five in the morning. Like, you know, you're going to be closing that thing down.
Hammered diner food. Oh, give me a break. And being high. Oh my gosh. I bet it tasted so good.
I will say I think they might have been at Cafeteria, the New York City restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Right. Like Cafeteria, it's on like 16th.
And I know they go there. Yeah, it looked like Cafeteria because it was all white inside. I'm not sure if that's the Cafeteria cameo. Anyway.
I feel very ill-equipped to discuss this, but I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't. But I feel like the fashion in this episode had some bangers too.
Man, Samantha. Like
Samantha's rocking some iconic looks.
The New York Dolls, like,
oh yeah,
slash t-shirt getup.
And they
kind of
poke fun at it too with Smith too, like not wanting to wear a label. And Samantha's like, if you don't have something they can't afford, then how are you going to, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was,
I feel like they made some good little digs at MTV in the best way. Like in a way that it was like very true about MTV and TRL and stuff.
As someone who worked at MTV, you weren't offended?
No, as someone who worked at MTV, I was like spot on.
You want to know what one of the original trolls was? Now it's like so easy to troll people on the internet. One of the original trolls, one of the early modern trolls was Tom Green, the bum song going to number one on TRL and them having to be like, they retired it because they were like, people are voting it so much. It could go on forever. Mm-hmm. So he like came on and was like, we're officially retiring it in order to not get trolled into. And now I feel like the internet troll is like, that's been perfected.
Well, when that was happening, Rick Astley was laying dormant in a volcano somewhere, just waiting to erupt.
Just ready. Just ready.
And now he's the go-to troll song forever and ever, I imagine.
They were all looking banging though.
All of them.
Also,
it was some pretty wild.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was interesting that, correct me if I'm wrong. Well, never mind. Smith was in it, but it was weird that not having Steve, not having Berger, like Smith is like a new character, but there was really no guys that are staples of the show besides Smith, Jared. And I loved his voice. His voice is so soothing and sexy.
Oh, dude.
I don't really wear labels.
He's a great actor. Like they have a lot of people that play hot douche or not hot douche. Like it'd be so easy for someone that good looking that to just come off as not as like heartfelt and just like a good person. But he really has all the things that everyone's been saying he has. He just seems like a good person.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
What's his deal? Like, do you think he obviously, I want to talk about this, like labeling someone a girlfriend before both parties are ready. Like what's his play there? Like, I think he obviously wants to date Samantha. Samantha probably obviously wants him, if she can remove some of her like battle worn bruised armor from potentially Richard, she wants him to be her boyfriend too. So like, what's his play there? Like keep pushing the fact and trying to like get her to come around, or is he making the right call and being like, I'll play the game. I'll say like, I don't have a girlfriend, but like, I'll let you figure this one out.
A clarification question for you. Do you mean what's his play in saying like when they hug and he's like, I got a girlfriend and they haven't had that discussion, or do you mean when he goes on TV taking her advice and playing into the PR move?
No, I think he needs to like play the PR move. Cause I think like not listening to Samantha's PR advice would be career suicide. Like totally. She knows what she's doing.
Totally.
But they're in this interesting position where Samantha says she doesn't want that label. He obviously wants that label. So does he like push the fact? Is he like, Samantha, like, you need to be my girlfriend. I want to be just exclusive with you. Or does he let her exhaust herself like a fish on a tight line and just be like eventually come around and figure it out? Like what would be your play there if you were with a woman who, or in a relationship where they didn't want that label?
It's a risky move because I think it's going to end well for them, but it's a risky move to push more commitment and risk scaring the person away.
Yeah.
Especially you got to be yourself, but I feel like it's always best to like communicate about it rather than put someone on the spot. you know?
Totally. Have you guys ever been, that's like, well, it's a different discussion. I was going to say that I love you put on the spot by someone, but that I will say that though, that's a different thing because the, I love you thing is someone take it. Like you don't have a discussion to be like, I mean, maybe some people do, but you don't have a discussion to be like, are we going to be the people that say, I love you? Like, I think you just do that because you're like, I got to tell you something.
Exactly.
I love you. That's a different thing. That's a totally different thing. And I think that is fine. If you, it's not even springing it on someone. It's just like, I need to tell you how I feel. But I do think the labeling thing is something that like affects your life socially. And like, it's like, oh, what are we now? It like kind of changes what you are, you know? So yeah, I think it should be.
It's so, both parties. It's so funny. It's just given so much fodder, but think about like when what are we started? You know what I mean? That's like literally the subject of like most comedic television now that isn't like, you know, Veep or something like that. But there's so many shows that are like all of those, like either
that's
like catastrophe is whether it's in dating or marriage or raising kids, there's so many different labels that it's like figuring out what used to be obvious. You know,
it's like When Harry Met Sally, it's the whole movie.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Which I think is really, that's really interesting. I feel like there's like a really interesting psychological book in there somewhere.
Oh, totally. Totally. And I think there's like some, there's probably like a lot of statistics about, like happiness and, you know, I'm a firm believer that we're condemned to be free. The more choices we have, the less happy we are about something. So, you know, like I'm sure, although there was some horrible things that came out of like arranged marriages, like there's also some statistics that people were like a lot happier or like found like a deeper meaning with some of those things. So
one of the things that I've thought about with, I wish there was some sort of service because we've been doing this Sex and City thing. We're also in a movie club that's private. You are listeners. We have,
although if you want to start a Patreon and give us money, we'll let you into the movie club.
No, actually we said based on this, we're starting a movie club.
We're starting with the Sex and City movie club.
But
we are doing that.
I was like, man, I was,
but
like,
if you want to send us money, you can be in our private movie club too.
Send us
$100 a month.
But there is something that it's like with all the streaming services, there's plenty of times that I've just been like scrolling around for 2 hours and then I'm like, ah, fuck this. I'm going to bed, or start a movie 15 minutes in. And I was like, it would be cool to just be part of something. Be like, listen, here's the movie schedule 7 days a week at 9 PM. Hey. This movie, and people host that and just talk. Could be
Kevin, you would know this. You know the song by Bruce Springsteen, 57 Channels and Nothing On. Do you know that song?
I don't know that.
It's about cable TV. And he talks about how you get all, you, it's like, and now it's like 1,000 channels.
Yeah.
It's like 1,000 channels and nothing on.
I tell the story of when I was a little kid. I was at the grocery store, the local Jewel Osco. And my mom, you know, we were looking at the back to school supplies. And I was looking at all the lunch boxes. There was Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there was He-Man. And she's like, you can have whatever you want. You can have whatever lunchbox you want, but you have to pick it out before we leave. And I was looking at all of them. You know, I saw all those different options. I couldn't do it. I ended up brown bagging it that entire year because there's just too many choices for me. Couldn't make up my mind. If she would have just been like, take the Star Wars one, you're getting Star Wars and you're going to love it. I would have been the toast of the town, man.
What if
you kidding
what
me
if
walking around with that?
That exact thing you just said, that exact paragraph, but in Carrie Bradshaw's mouth. And then at the end, she's like, and I couldn't help but wonder, are we all just brown bags looking for a special lunch? Corey, what were you going to say?
Okay, so there's an interesting scene, John, when you were saying, I feel ill-equipped to discuss the fashion. I feel ill-equipped to discuss this, but there's like a couple interesting scenes when they go to drown the hound, pound the ground, down the hatch. And it's like funny they meet like the bridge and tunnel people, but there's the scene where Charlotte goes and like there's a group of girls who are at like a bachelorette party and they're like, oh, take her picture. And then Carrie's like, she just got engaged too. And then they're like, oh my gosh, take a picture with us. And then they pull Charlotte in and then they put the
tiara
on her. And I feel like Charlotte completely overtakes their picture. And I know it's because it's the redemption of Charlotte not getting her wedding dress, but there was a weird thing there where it was like these four strangers are like at their bachelorette party. And then they're like, oh, cool, what's your deal? And then she completely, which that could be the kindness of strangers.
Well, I could see that happening in a way of like,
I could then see them take a second picture. I think like there's a thing where like they didn't take a second picture.
But then once you get into that, you're like, all right, we got 28 minutes. But it seems like it's actually a better scene that way if they take the picture and then they're like, what's on your finger? Or like you're engaged too? Second picture.
Yeah.
I
agree.
It's almost like it just didn't ring true. It was like, they're also pretty hammered. The girl played drunk pretty well.
I mean, I think that, I think the other thing is like, this has happened like all over the show and it makes total sense, but it's basically like everyone else's stories become the four girls' stories, but it's because they're the four main characters. Yeah. So that makes sense.
What else do we have to cover? Are we good?
I think the detained, but I just think like, I feel like that's a great stereotypical New York City cop.
Dude, when he was writing the ticket and he's just like, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Don't hate me. And tore the ticket. I was just like, whoever thought of that in the writer's room, like buy that person a beer now. That solid. Was so good. He had a great cop look too.
So apparently now, they just gave her a ticket, right? She didn't have to go to...
No, she didn't have to go downtown.
And I don't think he said, I'll give you a ticket for smoking in a bar. It made it sound like he was downgraded making it less, like not for possession of weed.
Well, now, I don't know when it was, but now literally that's the law of the land. Like it's illegal, but it's decriminalized. So you would just get a ticket if you did it now. And I will say, once that happened... You started smelling a lot more weed around New York.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Prospect Park the other day and the entire park just smells like weed.
Yeah.
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 Like a friend of mine last year, he was like, before pandemic happened, he was just like, if anyone wanted to know what 2019, 2020 was like in New York, it was like tensions are high and everything smells like weed.
Yep. Yeah. Everyone's
That's
got
completely
it.
What it's like.
Needs to. Yeah. Needs something to chill out.
It's just
speaking of getting high. Let's throw up some Cosmo ratings and see where we're at. I have predictions that this is going to score well, but you never know. It's in the mind of the boys. Everyone got their Cosmo rating?
Oh man, I had it.
I got it.
Now I'm juking it around.
All right, we're going live in 3, 2, 1. 4.25.
Shoot.
What'd you say?
4.25.
All right. You go first. Why 4.25?
It felt like a really great episode and it felt like a really great episode. It was super fun. I do think, like you said, some of the storylines dropped off a little bit, but I guess they all kind of had like pretty strong storylines. And they had some wrap ups to theirs. And it was just like a great fun picture of the whole night. I guess there was part of it where there's just some stuff that like, it felt like a continuation. It was kind of like a let's revisit and redigest the burger thing. So it wasn't like an episode where it's like, bam. Oh my gosh. She walks outside. What big is in the street? And then, oh shoot. Trey rolls up. Like it wasn't like a thing where it's like, bam, bam, bam. Like this could be a 5.0 rating.
Yeah.
But I still feel like it was really good and super fun and like pretty iconic for a lot of things. So, yeah.
I'll go, I think this episode made me really miss New York and those like nights that you can have in New York. We reminisced about some of our tales that we've had together. But it like also felt like a coming of age, like Superbad type movie where they were just kind of like wandering around from these different places, getting in adventures, meeting these people. And I just love that like type of storytelling. So although like Charlotte's storyline and Miranda's storyline were very weak, it was like the most amount of time I feel like all four of them together that we've ever had. And like Kevin said, like, I love that it was one day. It was like the morning into the day. And it was just like one day with all these women. And I don't know. I just really loved it. Would watch it again. 4.5.
Yeah. I felt like this had all of the flavor of a 5.0 episode. There was just, it didn't have the like epic storylines, and that's actually what made it great. It was almost like, you know, like when they give out Best Picture, like Best Picture typically goes to something that it's like not just like a small little indie drama, because it's like, even if that's your favorite movie of the year, you're like, it's got to go to something like Parasite or, you know, or like a big war movie or Saving Private Ryan or something. Those are the movies mm-hmm. that feel, and this felt like kind of like its own small little indie movie feel. Like they weren't taking on these like epic things, but it was really cool in that way. And yeah, the theme didn't necessarily go through for everyone, but in a way it did. Like I just thought it was really cool. I thought it was really well done, and yeah. it felt like a different yeah. flavor than any other Sex and the City episode, but completely a Sex and the City episode. So I loved it. And there was just some big iconic moments that were great. So, yeah.
It also, I didn't even think about this, but like it does end up having a good ending of a, like, the friend therapy you need when you're going through a breakup.
Totally.
They all end up, totally. They're like, we had a crazy night. We almost got arrested. Oh, what was I going to say? I don't know. We're all like hazy and eating ice cream now. And just yeah. like, we're like, that's exactly what you need. You're just like friends are together. It's not a night where Carrie's like crying, sitting on the curb. Like she's just like having fun with her friends.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Not a better place in the world to get drunk and go to a diner at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. Anyway, you listeners, you're our friends. We love you so much. Thanks so much for listening. If you haven't already, go ahead, hop on over to iTunes. Give us a write a review for how you think we are. We're doing.
And also,
a five Cosmo rating.
We're banging out some extra content over there at the Patreon. We're writing our own Sex and the City episodes. We're doing a movie club. We're going through listener questions. So if you're over there, we're doing got a schedule going, and we got all kinds of new episodes that are not just these episodes. So subscribe to the Patreon and you know, and we'll hear us blabbing a little bit more.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much. And as always, later taters.
Abso-fucking later taters. Bye.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at thebradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.